And the next item on the agenda is a briefing from the Department of Green Resources on the CARES Act funds, with the exception of the funds that were sent to members of the Tribes of Maine.
Okay, and I know the department's here. Also, I will take responsibility for calling Representative McDonald to give her the different time schedule than we normally have for voting. And we'll move on to the CARES Act briefing by the department, please.
Good morning. So I am Deirdre Gilbert. I'm the Director of State Marine Policy at the department, and I was going to give you this briefing this morning. I did have a few slides, if that is okay for me to share show those, just to help walk through some of the details.
Sure. And I'll just say, Linda, can you allow Deirdre to do that? And Sherm, I know you don't want to do anything that keeps you from being able to talk to us, but when you're not talking, if you could mute, it'd be appreciated. Thank you. Okay.
So can folks see my screen now?
Yes.
So I just wanted to kind of refresh everybody's memory about the timeline for these funds. These CARES Act funds were provided in the federal legislation that was passed back in March of 2020. And at that time, Congress had appropriated $300 million for the country for economic assistance to participants in the seafood industry that were impacted by the coronavirus pandemic. Once that bill was signed into law, NOAA began a process of trying to decide how much of that $3 million went to each individual state, tribe, and territory that were impacted by the coronavirus. And they announced those allocations in May of 2020. Maine received $20 million of the overall $300 million. And NOAA did that based on their own analysis of the historical revenues each of the relevant sectors provided. So it wasn't based on impact to the state. It was based on historically how much these activities were worth in each state. Maine received the fifth highest amount in that allocation process. Ahead of us were Alaska, Washington, Massachusetts, and Florida. So in May of 2020, we found out that we would be receiving $20 million to distribute. And the sectors that we could distribute those funds to were commercial fishermen, aquaculturists, for-hire guides, seafood dealers, and processors. So that is really every sector of the marine economy that the department interacts with. That's basically, or at least every commercial sector that we interact with. So that is a large group and diverse group of constituents. At the time, the commissioner pointed out that $20 million is a lot of money. So the good news is Maine got $20 million. At the same time, $20 million doesn't go very far in an industry that's worth over $1.5 billion. And we were expecting very extreme impacts to the marine economy back that spring because we really weren't sure how the pandemic was going to influence markets. So we thought if there was a 35% impact to Maine's marine economy from this virus, that's really a hole of maybe $500 million, and we had $20 million to fill it. So we were very concerned that this money wasn't going to go far enough, and we knew that we wanted to get it out as quickly as possible to provide immediate relief. So the first thing that we had to do was develop a spend plan that NOAA could approve. We started writing that spend plan kind of right after we found out how much money there was. The first thing that we did was do a survey of industry members to find out what the people who could potentially receive these funds, what did they think the best use of the money was. So we sent out a survey, an online survey, to over 9,000 potential applicants, and we got back about 880 responses, and the majority of those responses supported direct payments to individuals. We did try to explain in that survey, if we did direct payments, we didn't think the direct payments would be very large, given the large number of people who would be eligible. So we told folks, you know, we think it will be between $2,000 and $4,000 for a direct payment. And that is still what, you know, 80% of people supported doing that with the money. There was some support for other work that would benefit the industry broadly. And so as a result of that input, we did allocate the majority of the funds to direct payments. And then we reserved a small amount, about 5% of the funds, to conduct a Maine seafood marketing program. And between those two things, we had hoped that the direct payments would provide immediate relief, and then the marketing program would support the markets that would kind of sustain the industries over the longer term. So we can do a future presentation on the seafood marketing program if that's of interest. I'm just going to focus on how we handled the direct payment component. There were really three major things that needed to be resolved and detailed in the spend plan. The first one was who would be eligible to apply for funds through this program. And we wanted to make that as straightforward as possible. So there were really kind of three key things. The first was that you had to be a Maine resident. The second was that you had to be 18 years of age or older. And the third was that you either had to hold a license in one of the sectors that was eligible for funds. And some of those sectors don't actually have licensing requirements. So the alternative was whatever was the thing that authorized you to do the activity. So just as an example, for aquaculture, that would be holding a lease potentially instead of having a license. Or if you were a for-hire guide, it might be that you were recognized by NOAA as an active for-hire participant in 2019. The reason that we used 2019 was that, again, we were pretty early in 2020 at this point in time. Not everybody buys their license early in the year. So, and some folks were choosing at that point to not buy their license because they weren't participating in the activity in 2020 because of the coronavirus. So the logic to 2019 was that that was the group of people who were immediately prior to the pandemic engaged in an activity that were potentially impacted by the pandemic in 2020. So that is really kind of the population that we were in Maine that we were reaching out to. Then for NOAA, we had to define how we would ensure that two of the criteria that they were requiring would be met. The first one was that folks who received funds through this program had to be able to document that they had a greater than 35% revenue loss in 2020. That revenue loss in 2020 was in comparison to the prior five-year average. We were really concerned about this criteria and how all of the constituents that were impacted by this program would be able to calculate that. Early in our conversations, NOAA had indicated that that 35% loss could be shown by individual or by sector. And initially, we thought that by sector, they meant potentially something like we could qualify the entire lobster fishery because we could show that in March of 2020, the revenues in the lobster fishery were, the revenue loss in that fishery was greater than 35% as compared to the March of the prior 5 years. So we thought we could qualify every license holder that way. And then they explained, no, every license holder would need to be qualified on an individual basis. So then the department embarked on an analysis of all commercial fishing license holders. And the reason that we did commercial fishing license holders is that we do have landings information for that sector. we don't have revenue information for aquaculturists, for hire guides, and we don't have complete revenue information for dealers. So commercial fishermen were the only group that we could do this for. But we looked at every individual license holder, and we looked at their landings and the revenues generated from those landings in 2020 as compared to the prior five-year average. And we evaluated on an individual basis, can we show that that person has experienced a greater than 35% revenue loss? We were doing this analysis in July of 2020. So the data that we had at the time were landings data from January through June of 2020. So we compared those months to the prior five-year average for each individual and made a determination if there was any fishery that that person participated in where they had a greater than 35% revenue loss. If we did not find that that individual had a revenue loss during that time frame, they were still going to be eligible to apply. We considered that an appeal of the program, and they would just have to tell us the month that they individually experienced that level of revenue loss. So that was that first criteria, and that is kind of a standalone criteria. There's two that I'm going to talk about. And so once you have achieved that criteria, you can kind of set that aside and then move on to the second one. The second one is a requirement that the funds that you receive through this program were not intended to make an applicant what NOAA termed more than whole. And I've tried to explain this concept to a lot of people, and I feel like it kind of works better conceptually than anything else. So when I've been explaining it, I've been saying, you know, what Congress was trying to do was provide you with funding that would bring your 2020 revenues up to what they historically had been, but they did not want to give you so much money that it made your 2020 revenues higher than what you usually made doing this activity. So that's what they considered more than whole. And they wanted people in making that determination to consider their commercial fishing revenue in 2020 and all other sources of CARES Act relief that they might have accessed. So that would include PPP and unemployment funds. So all of those things together weren't supposed to make a person's 2020 revenues higher than their prior five-year average. For this criteria, that was for the entire year, so for all of 2020. This is another thing that is challenging for people and challenging for us, because we were trying to balance the need to get the funds out as quickly as we could with people's ability to make this determination. And that is different across these sectors and across these, even within the commercial fishing industry. So for some fisheries, they've done their activity by the fall. Other people are going to be fishing right up until the end of the year. So I talked to a lot of people who were trying to figure this out, and they were saying, well, I don't know if I'm going to be made more than whole because I don't know what I'm going to make in November and December. And that's kind of the point in the conversation where when we consulted with NOAA, they said, well, if that happens, then folks can just return any money that it turns out they shouldn't have accepted. And that seemed the safest thing to do, rather than kind of short yourself by not taking money that you really could take. It made more sense to most people to say, well, I'll say I can take the money, and then if I can't, then I'll give it back. In order to help people make that determination, we had to kind of give them a rough idea of how much money we thought this was going to be. Again, given the number of people that might be eligible to apply, our first kind of estimate was that it would be between $2,000 and $4,000 per person in the commercial fishing, aquaculture, and for-hire sectors, and then about $10,000 in the dealer processor sector. And that was just based on our best guess as to how many people might actually apply. So that's kind of the information that people had to go on entering into the application process. The application period began in October of 2020, on October 19th. It was open for 3 weeks until November 9th. And prior to the application period opening, we sent just under 10,000 letters to all of the folks that met those initial criteria, the main resident over the age of 18, licensed or otherwise authorized to do the activity in 2019. We sent 8,500 roughly of those letters to the commercial fishing industry. Remember I explained we did the analysis to find out if somebody had had a 35% revenue reduction. So about 5,300 of those folks, we could certify that for them. The other 3,000, we told them, you would have to show that you had this revenue loss, but you can do that. And then there were about 230 for-hire guides, 320 aquaculturists, and 460 seafood dealers and processors. And all of those sectors, again, because we didn't have the information for them, they had to provide the information regarding their 35% revenue loss and the more than whole piece. We took applications online and over the phone. We did not do any paper applications because we were very concerned about a couple things. One was, again, getting 10,000 applications that we had to then do data entry for after we received them. So it was more efficient to just collect it online. And if somebody couldn't do that, we would take the information for them over the phone. The other thing that we were wanting to guard against the potential of applications being lost in the mail. So this seemed a safer way of doing things. We hadn't intended to hire three temps to take those applications over the phone for us. It actually turned out to be really hard to find people to do that for such a short time frame. A 3 week long temp job was not that attractive, it turns out. The commissioner talked to other commissioners and asked if there was any other staff within state government that could help us with this exercise. And we were really fortunate that the Department of Corrections actually had three staff that they were willing to kind of lend us for the duration of this project. These folks had actually also helped the Department of Labor with some unemployment calls earlier. So we had access to three DOC staff, which was tremendously helpful, and I don't think we could have done this without them, frankly. So we took those applications over the phone, or people applied online themselves without calling anybody. They could just go to the department website and fill it out online. And within that application, that was the opportunity for folks with regard to the more than whole criteria. We estimated on the high side, we thought at the time. So we said, we think these payments are going to be about $4,000. Can you take $4,000 without that making you more than whole? And if somebody said, no, I can't take $4,000, they had the opportunity to tell us a smaller amount of money that they could accept that wouldn't make them more than whole. So if $4,000 was too much and would bring their 2020 revenues above their prior five-year average, they could say, I can take $2,000. So we collected that information as part of the application process. When the actual 3 weeks was up and we knew how many applications we really had, we had many fewer than we had estimated we would get. So in the commercial fishing, aquaculture, and for hire categories, we ended up getting about 2,600 applications. I had thought we might get 4,000 applications, and I thought that was a conservative estimate based on the fact that we had sent out 9,500 letters. So I thought less than half of people will reply. It was even less than that in reality. And then from the seafood dealer processor sector, out of 466 letters, we got 130 applications. I think there's a lot of factors that went into that kind of outcome. One of the things that happened at the same time that we were doing this that you may remember seeing is that the former administration released some tariff relief funds. In Maine, those primarily went to the lobster industry. So that was not a coronavirus related program. It was related to a determination that there had been harmful impacts of tariffs on certain fisheries. But the lobster industry in particular was eligible for up to 50 cents a pound for each pound of landings that they had in 2019. So that ended up being, I think at this point, there's been close to $50 million distributed as a result of that program. And that was going on concurrently, and that was just to the lobster industry. So that was obviously a much higher opportunity for at least for that sector, which may have influenced some people's decisions about whether or not to apply to this program. But again, I based on my conversations, I think there's a lot of reasons we got fewer applications than we thought we would. Once we had the applications in hand, we had to go through a process to make sure that the people who applied or appealed through the online application were actually eligible to submit an application. And so, you know, since it was an online thing, hypothetically, anybody in the world could have submitted an application. And so we needed to make sure that everybody who applied was actually met those criteria. And so we were checking to make sure, were they a 2019 license holder? Did they apply in the right sector? So if they were a commercial fisherman, is that the application they filled out? That didn't always happen. Is the social security number that they gave us, does that match what we have in our licensing database? One of the reasons that that was important was in the letters that we sent and in the application, we did explain that based on the information we had from NOAA, these funds were taxable. And so a 1099 would be generated for each person. So we had to make sure that we were attributing those funds to the correct individual. As it turns out, sometimes the social security number that they gave us in the application was different than the social security number that was in our licensing database. When that happened, we didn't have any way of knowing which is the correct social security number. If it's off by one number, like, did they make the mistake when they filled out their application, or did they make the mistake when they got their license? So we had to call all those folks and make sure we had the right number. And then the final thing we had to do was make sure that the license holder wasn't suspended during the period of the impact. So we were trying to the best of our ability, make sure that the reason the person wasn't fishing or that their revenue was reduced was related to coronavirus, not because they were prohibited from fishing. So we had to check all of those things. And then for the appeals and for the non-commercial fishing applications, we had to check all of the things that we checked on the application. And then we also had to confirm that the revenue loss that they specified was greater than 35%. That didn't always happen. If they said that their revenue loss occurred in the lobster fishery, did they have a lobster license? If they said that they have fished in the prior 5 years, were they licensed in the prior 5 years? So it was really a pretty high level check of that information, but there were a lot of instances where the information they gave us did not match up with what we knew about their license, the licenses they held and their license history. So that has been a really time consuming process and more complicated to conduct than one might imagine. But we've been doing that since December of 2020. And we are still doing that right now, working our way through the remainder of the applications. The checks that we sent out, the next slide will kind of tell you the timeline, but as you've heard, the checks that we sent out ended up being larger than what we had estimated in the letters and in the application, where we had said we don't think they're going to be more than $4,000. Because there were fewer applications, the way that the check size was determined was by taking the amount of money that we had to distribute for direct payments and dividing it up amongst the number of people who applied. And that's how we calculated what the payment would be. So for the harvesters, as I said, we got about 2,600 applications. We had estimated that the checks would not be more than $4,000. As it turned out, they were $6,155. At that point, we had to make a decision. Were we going to go back out to the 2,600 license holders and say, we thought we were going to give you $4,000, but now it's really $6,000. Can you take $6,000 and have, you know, collect that information before we distributed the checks? Or we could distribute the checks and then tell folks, if this is more than you can accept, if this makes you more than whole, then you need to return whatever excess funds there are to ASMFC. And again, we were trying to balance the need to get the money out, folks were very interested in receiving their payments, with embarking on a new data collection exercise. ASMFC was very amenable to just dealing with the funds getting returned to them. So that is ultimately the direction that we went. We decided to send the money out, and if it's too much, then people had the option of returning what they needed to. On the dealer side, just because there were so many fewer dealers, there were only about 130, we did send an email to that population because it was manageable, and just gave them, I think, about a week to say, in this instance, we thought the checks would be $10,000. They were really $26,105. And so we asked people, if you want to give us a lower number that you can accept, you can do that before you write the checks. And that was, I think there was about maybe six people who responded and gave us a smaller number. So then we were ready to actually send the payments out. That first round went out in December of 2020. The first checks were, we sent down the payment list to ASMFC on December 21st, and we were trying really hard to get that out before Christmas. ASMFC turned around 2,176 payments on the harvester side and 70 payments on the dealer side. In one day, they issued the checks, put them in the mail, and got them out the door on December 22nd. And again, at the time, I was thinking, this is great. We're going to get these money. People will get their money right around Christmas. But what ended up happening was that the U.S. Postal Service was slammed with Christmas deliveries and packages and mail. And those checks went into the mail in DC on December 22nd. And my hypothesis, I'll never know, but I think they ended up in a warehouse somewhere between Virginia and Maine for a long time, because the checks just disappeared. They went into a black hole and we didn't know where they were. And during this time frame, our phones were ringing off the hook because folks knew we had mailed them, but they hadn't received them. So everyone was concerned that their check was lost. We did send out some emails to try to say, we don't think that's the case yet. Like, we think they're just somewhere in the US mail system, and hopefully they're going to come out the other end. A portion of them came out about 3 weeks later, and then the remainder came out on January 22nd. So it took a full month for those checks to make it from Virginia to Maine. Coincidentally, January 22nd was also the day that we had kind of decided, if the checks aren't here by now, we're going to start a reissuance process. So we were collecting from people who wanted their check to be reissued. We were collecting that information. And then, of course, on the day that we were about to say, okay, go ahead and reissue, that's when those remaining checks hit people's mailboxes. So that was a big relief that those had arrived. that was a large portion of the funds that were dispersed. So in December, again, we had $13.2 million in harvester payments on the 22nd, and then there was another $770,000 on the 29th. So together, that was $14 million that we distributed in December. And then the dealers received $1.7 million amongst the 70 payments that were made. We just cleared and submitted another round of payments a couple days ago. So between the harvesters and the dealers, that was roughly another $1 million worth of payments. And that means that with the current round of CARES Act fisheries relief, we have dispersed about 92% of the funds we have available for harvesters to about 2,300 recipients. And about 70% of the money that we had for dealers has been distributed to about 90 dealers. There's still about, I'd say, another 30 or so that we're working on. So we are getting close. I think we're these last ones will probably be the most time consuming because I haven't been able to resolve them by now, but we'll keep working on it. I treated every application that we received as though it would get paid. So I have, there is money for everybody who actually applied. And at the end of the day, we just need to make sure that they meet those eligibility criteria. And if that is the case, then they will receive the funds. While we were going through this process, Congress did pass another relief bill. I'll let the commissioner correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's for another $300 million. So I think it's the same amount of money nationwide. NOAA hasn't made the individual state allocations yet, so we don't know what Maine will receive, and we don't know if they'll follow the same process. A lot of the limitations remain the same. The 35% revenue loss was also in this relief package, so that's something that we'll have to continue to require can be demonstrated. There are a few differences in the next round, it's kind of early days. And as far as I know, there are a lot of states that haven't dispersed their first round of funding yet. So I don't know if NOAA wants everybody to kind of catch up before we start the next round, but I'll let Pat add anything that he thinks is relevant about the next round.
Thanks, Deidre. The next round is broken out differently. $255 million of those dollars will go to states and territories instead of the full $300. They did break out $30 million, which will go directly to federally recognized tribes. I think I may have mentioned that on one of our last meetings. And then $15 million will go to the Great Lakes region because NOAA does have oversight within the Great Lakes region. So they are working determination of what that split will be. Right now they're planning on using the same formula. So we should still be at the top of the list as far as the total dollar amount. There doesn't seem to be any changes in any other policies associated with it, but on a briefing of the Executive Committee of the Atlantic State Marine Fisheries Commission this week, we did ask many questions that they will be going back to answer. In particular, Deidre focused on the Made More Than Whole, and what we're hoping is that they will create some flexibility. The Made More Than Whole component is not part of the federal law. It is policy that was developed by the agency, and so we're going to continue to push for some more flexibility on the Made More Than Whole. And that's all I've got.
Thank you. Thank you both. Anybody have any questions for the department? Representative Crafts has a question. Go ahead.
Thank you, Senator Miramont. I just had a question, Deirdre, about you said that some of the payments came through on January 22nd, but have all of those been accounted for and have folks been reissued checks if they didn't receive the initial?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So ASMFC can tell when checks have been cashed, and they have been keeping us updated on the number of checks that were sent out versus the number of checks that have been cashed. Obviously, if something hasn't been cashed, we can't tell did somebody get it and they just haven't deposited yet, or have they not received it? So there have probably been maybe a half dozen people who have contacted us to say, I still don't have my check and now I'm really worried. And so we have reissued everyone who has asked, we have reissued those checks. It does void the original check. So should they happen to get the first one, then they're kind of out of luck. They'll have to wait for the second one, but we are doing that at this point.
Great, thank you. And so if a constituent had that concern that they hadn't received it, they should just contact you directly to the office. Yes.
Great. Anybody else with any questions? Representative McDonald, you are out when we voted on the supplemental budget. Don't go away. We're going to have your vote before we go. Just as a note, did you keep track of what percentage of folks used online access to telephone access?
I haven't calculated that percentage. We did log every application that was taken over the phone. So I haven't gone back to count up how many were taken over the phone versus online, but it is something that I could figure out.
You don't have to for me, but I just wondered if it gives you a representative sample of what the fishing industry generally has for online access, to know how to make it easier for them in the future. Although, you know, you did it in the two ways that were best, so that was great. But I just wondered. Thank you. And Commissioner Kelleher.
Thanks, Senator. I do want to just let the committee know that we did have a good conversation with the tribal chiefs yesterday on this issue. I think the outstanding issue for them right now is the taxation issue, which is outside of our purview. They have reached out to the congressional delegation to try to get an answer through the IRS. There is some language pertaining to commercial fishing revenue not being taxable, but it's not clear to me, not being a tax attorney, on whether that actually applies in this situation. So I know the delegation is working on that, and we have forwarded information from the delegation to NOAA. NOAA has to make a final decision on that issue. And because there needs to be some time to work it out, the Atlantic State Marine Fisheries Commission has received the approval of a delay for issuing 1099. So hopefully we'll have that resolved in the next couple of weeks for the tribe, and we'll have an understanding whether those taxes have to be paid or not.
Great. Thank you for that. Anyone else? Okay. Well, thank you very much for your briefing and for always being here. And Representative McDonald, go ahead. Do you have a question?
I don't have a question, but I had to take a call and miss the vote, so I would like an opportunity to vote before the meeting adjourns, please.
And we're going to come right back to you. I think we can let the department go now, unless anyone else has a question, and we'll move on to Representative McDonald. Seeing no more hands, thank you very much, Deirdre and Commissioner, and we'll see you soon. Okay. Linda, would you like to take Representative McDonald's vote, please?
Yes, Representative McDonald, I believe the motion was to accept all of the references together, and it was motioned by Representative Hutchins and seconded by Senator Rosen. How do you vote, in favor or against?
Yay.
Thank you. That makes 13 unanimous.
Oh, nice. I'm sure all our votes will be that way, especially on my bills, but thank you very much. And Lynn, are you still here?
I am still here, and that is the end of your official agenda. So you need to do a motion to adjourn once you've decided everything's done.
I have nothing else. Representative McCray is testifying elsewhere or on another committee, as far as I know. I don't see her at the moment. Anybody else have anything before we adjourn the meeting? Great. Nice to see you all. I'll accept a motion to adjourn from someone, please.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
From Representative McDonald. We have a second somewhere, and this can be a voice vote, can't it, Linda? Or not?
Very sorry, I'm muted. Yes, it can be.
Oh, good, good. Okay, all those in favor of adjourning, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Raise your hand.
Yes.
Yeah, something, yay. Yes. Good. Thanks. Great to see you all. See you next week. And